I don't know on any cat, I do not know how much thyroid medication they're going to need to get to the level we want, whether they're at 7 like this cat or whether they're 3.5. I have no idea.
Welcome to the So You're a Vet Now What, the podcast. This is a show that serves as your audio mentor in your journey as a veterinarian. And each week, our awesome host, Dr. Mariah McCauley, will be bringing you insightful short-form interviews with happy, successful vets who are eager to share their career and clinical tips to make your life easier. So whether you're a final year vet student or a recent graduate, this podcast is your trusted companion on the pathway to success in veterinary medicine. Over to you, Mo.
Welcome back to So You're a Vet, Now What? I'm your host, Dr. Mariah McCauley. Each week, I am joined by incredible vets who are eager to share the stories of their careers as well as clinical tips to help you thrive in practice. So whether you are a final year vet student or a recent graduate, this podcast is your virtual mentor on the pathway to success in veterinary medicine. Today on the podcast, I am joined by Dr. Gary Marshall. Gary has spent the majority of his career working in feline-only medicine, and back during COVID was one of the masterminds behind the infamous cat class. As a new grad, one of the bigger challenges isn't in knowing the medicine, but how you communicate that knowledge to the client. In this episode, we will be focusing on how to do that with hyperthyroidism in our feline patients. Listen along as Gary walks you through how to develop and confidently communicate the diagnosis and management plan to your clients. All right, let's jump right into the episode. All right, well, Dr. Marshall, welcome back. We are continuing our plan of talking about some clinical cases for you guys. And so this week we're talking about hyperthyroidism in our feline patients. So Gary, I'll kind of hand it over to you. Again, I'm that new grad who's come to you, and I have that cat that's a little skinny, and maybe he's like 10. And otherwise, like, the owner didn't really think there was too much wrong with him other than he has a great appetite, I'll tell you. But we ran some lab work on him, and his T4 came back at, like, I don't know, like 7. So I think we have a hyperthyroid cat here, but I don't really know, like, how to get the ball rolling. Like, I know the medicine, but how do I talk to this client about this?
Yeah. Hi again, Mariah. It's always great to be here. Yeah, these hyperthyroid cats are pretty common for these old ones to come in. But like you said, the owners don't really have that many concerns because my cat's cruising around, talking a lot, eating like crazy. So not showing the signs that make them think, oh, my cat's super, super sick, except they're probably getting skinny. So it's typically at a senior exam that we're seeing, cat's lost 1.5 pounds since last year, or maybe it's even just 0.5 pounds. And so we start trying to encourage them to get some diagnostics. And a lot of that I like to do is, yes, your cat's showing all these outward fine symptoms, but if our suspicions are correct that your cat could have an overabundance of thyroid hormone circulating, that can put extra strain on a lot of organs, especially the heart, and also just not being able to keep up with their needs. And if old cats are losing weight, that's a huge red flag to me. So I try to focus on, we want to correct these things, and I want to see if there's a simple way to do that. And then we get that blood work back that shows us a thyroid of 7.0, which is definitely an easy slam dunk hyperthyroid case. And then we can start talking to them about how do we correct this and what they will see as we correct it.
No, I think that's great. So, like, let's keep going. So we were having the conversation. We're like, yep, we're seeing these things on our lab work. And oh, yeah, our ALT is also elevated, looking at that. But obviously, we know that that's part of the thyroid. But not every single new grad knows that. So yeah, looking at our lab work, we're looking at everything. Everything's, I mean, kidney values are within range, maybe higher end, but ALT is elevated, T4 is elevated. So we're like, cool, yep, we have hyperthyroidism. But now we need to decide, how are we going to enact management for this patient? So how do we go about conversing with the client about that?
Yeah, I think the first part is, like we've talked about, we've already built up like when we talked about kidney disease, we've built up before we even see the lab work to kind of build in those expectations that we think this is coming. And so they have a little bit of an inkling that this might be the case. And then once we confirm it, we can start talking about what do we do about it now. So we've already told them that it's important to treat. And then I think it's really crucial, because people are nervous, to say this is a very treatable disease. It's even a curable disease. And so here's laying out some options that are going to work best for them, their pocketbook, their cat, and their family as we go through this. And like we've talked about with other diseases, is that no judgment. We're going to maybe steer them. We're going to definitely educate them on the different options, what it means down the road. And I think this is a really, really important time to let them know that as we treat these cats, whichever way we treat them, their cat is going to seem less hungry, and don't be worried about that. Because they've always thought, oh, my cat's not eating very well, they must be sick. And then as they become more normal, they may not seem like they're eating very much. And then it's really, really crucial just to say that's normal. As long as they're gaining weight, we're affecting their metabolism. That's a really, really good sign. And I like to let people know, hey, you're probably going to save some money on food because they're going to be spending money someplace else, yeah. Right? And at this time, if we're starting to talk about, we've talked about what the disease is, what the disease is doing to them, what it's going to look like when it's better, then it's like, okay, now they're bought in as far as, okay, how do we get there? Let's get started. And I like to boil it down to three choices for them. And once we can narrow that down with the owner for different reasons, then it's like, okay, I'm not even going to go into these other options if they've already excluded them on their own until we need to, as future follow-up happens and we decide we got to change something. So those three options, we have a prescription food that is Hill's Prescription Diet YD that is virtually deficient in iodine. And iodine is, as we know, is one of the, in your organic chemistry models, is one of the things that is necessary in thyroid hormone to be thyroid hormone. And so if we don't give them enough of it, they can't make extra thyroid hormone. So it's pretty genius if we can accomplish it. And then we have methimazole, which both binds up and somehow decreases the production of thyroid hormone in their thyroid gland. So we can give them drugs to tamp down that level and how it affects their body. And then we have radioactive iodine, a one-time dosing at a specialty center that has the license to use those radioactive materials to nuke the cats. And it selectively is absorbed into the thyroid gland, wipes out those cancerous hyperactive cells, and then they're back down to normal. So if a client initially says, you know, I have 17 cats and I'm not going to buy a special food for one cat, or I'm not going to pay for food for all my cats, and it's like, okay, we don't talk about that one. Or if an owner says, there's no way I'm giving pills to my cat twice a day, it's like, okay, we don't talk about that one. And the other's like, I ain't spending $1,500 or $2,000 and taking my cat wherever it is, because I don't know where iodine is next to these people. Then we say, okay, these are options, but you don't have to spend the time talking about that. And you focus on the one that seems realistic. And then if it's not working, you go on to the next one the next time you see them.
Yeah. No, I think that's really good, kind of taking the time to give a brief overview, because otherwise you will spend 30, 40 minutes on the phone with a client who's now overwhelmed with information, kind of over-scienced with everything. And one thing that, again, I kind of interested on your viewpoint on it is using, if a cat is really bad about oral meds, or say you tried the oral meds and they started vomiting all over the place, using the transdermal compounding at an external pharmacy. I've had some really good luck with that in cats that don't do diet, can't do pills, and they can't spend the money. So have you used it before?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we definitely use it. And it's a tool in our arsenal, I think. And I'm not a pharmacology scientist
or just all that. GP vets here. GP vets.
Yeah. Yeah. GP vets. So the way I use that to tell people is that for some, it's going to be absorbed even better. So it's going to affect them even more because it goes straight into the bloodstream. It doesn't have to be absorbed or digested. And for others, it just doesn't absorb very well. And so we don't get the feedback we want. So it's a little bit harder to especially if we're changing from one to the other and we're on, you know, 2.5 milligrams twice a day of the oral, and then you switch 2.5 milligrams transdermal may do exactly the same thing, or it may not work at all, or we may need to double it. And so when I let people know about those types of things, then they're not surprised when I say, I want to see your cat again in 2 weeks so we can check that thyroid again, or 3 weeks, whatever, and see if we need to adjust it. Because that's where we're going to have to, I don't want them to go too long at an improper dose, either too much or too little.
Are you a new or recent veterinary graduate? If so, listen up. My course, Sawyer Vet Now What, has been put together specifically for you. We focus on the non-clinical skills. Don't tune out. This is not as dull as it sounds, I promise you. In fact, almost every career problem that people face are due to not having well-developed non-clinical skills. The skills that I'm talking about are things like client communication, so you have great relationships with clients, emotional intelligence, so you've got great relationships with your teammates, effective negotiation skills, so you can get paid what you are worth, management of imposter syndrome, and how to build formidable resilience. They're not just skills, they are prerequisites vital for success in financial and emotional well-being. This course serves as an essential stepping stone to your success. So let's take the leap together. I will be your mentor as we go through 12 modules helping you transition from being a student to being a fully rounded professional. Head to www.drdavenichol.com/SYAV-class to learn more. Now back to the show.
And that was actually going to be my next question of like that long-term plan. So we've talked about, okay, your cat has hyperthyroidism. We're going to get them started. Say we decided on transdermal or oral methimazole. When should we be rechecking the thyroid? But also we kind of touched a little bit on the fact that the thyroid impacts so many other parts of the body. So how are we checking those kidneys? How are we checking those liver values? Like what are we doing and when should we be rechecking those on a general scale?
Yeah. Good question. Super, super important. And it's going to be different in each.
The answer each is it depends.
It depends. But let's go with iodine. Your iodine centers are going to have a protocol that they want. They want labs at certain intervals so that they can, you know, do their quality assurance. They can tell how it's going. So, and that's typically with our iodine center, it's 1 month and 3 months after treatment. I don't mind doing it at 3 weeks after that. So we can potentially catch some things if there's problems. The other extreme is if we're going to go on food, and for some clients, this is going to be a reason to try the food. It's like, let's send some food home. If the cat eats it, it's an option. Let's give it a try. And then they get more and they go on. I'm going to tell them, if your cat's eating well, I don't want to really see you back for 2 months.
Okay.
Because I know the diet is not going to affect the thyroid levels as much to make me nervous. Well, we can't overdose them, right? So I'm not nervous about seeing dramatic unmasking of kidney disease. And we'll talk about that in a second with the pills. And in my experience, even though on the diet, on the back of the bag, it says like recheck it a month, I have a lot that the low point isn't until closer to 2 months. And since I'm not going to be overdosing them, I don't want to spend their money and say, let's check again in a month. So I just go longer and then I know if it's working or not. And you give more time to see if they're actually eating the food continuously or not. On the tablets, I don't know on any cat. I do not know how much thyroid medication they're going to need to get to the level we want. It might be a milligram. It might be 10 milligrams, whether they're at 7 like this cat or whether they're 3.5. I have no idea. So there's standards that we can start at, but there's going to be that bell curve is pretty narrow in the center and a lot of cats off to the edges. And so if I'm worried that this is an old cat and we don't know where we're going, I will see some cat. If I'm worried that they already have kidney disease that we're not seeing as well because the thyroid, extra thyroid hormone is perfusing those kidneys like crazy and making our BUN and creatinine look better than they really are, I want them to come in 2 weeks. And so I can see a trend if I'm really, really nervous. And some of this is you want to cover your behind, but you want to do what's best for the cat. And also, if I'm worried about how, if the cat's pretty like sick when we're starting this, I also want to see where their RBCs are. If they're becoming anemic, there's a rare cat that's going to become anemic too from methimazole. So I want to make sure that we're doing, besides just checking that thyroid hormone and the kidney values, the first time or two we're checking up after methimazole, I want to see a CBC. And it costs more money and you got to get a little bit more blood, but that is something you do not want to miss as you go forward. It's like, oh, you've been treating like crazy and the cat's PCV is 18 when it was 35, you know? So with the medication, I want to see them early. And then if it's right in the sweet spot, maybe 3 months. If it's not, we need to adjust it. I'll have them come back in 3 or 4 weeks. And after a change in the dosing, and I let them know at that first visit that I don't know if I'm going to have to see you 5 times the next 3 months or twice.
It really depends.
It depends.
Yep. If any of you are familiar with cat class, the big old slogan of cat class is it depends for pretty much every single answer. But I feel like, I mean, at this point in my career, hyperthyroidism is pretty straightforward in how we're going to take care of it, how I'm going to communicate it with the client. But again, it's cumbersome for new grads to kind of think through these processes and figure out how am I going to present the information to the client in a way that makes sense to them, helps them make a decision, helps them feel like they have ownership of that decision. And so I feel like you've kind of broken it down in a really easy to understand way, because again, they're going to see a ton of hyperthyroid cats when they come through. And they're also going to see a ton of hypothyroid dogs, which I feel like it's kind of important to kind of point out the differences between how we diagnose them and how we manage them, in that I feel like with hyperthyroid cats, I really don't send out, and maybe the specialists want to cover their ears when I say this, but I really don't send out like free T4 and all these things for a lot of these cats because they are so slam dunk. Like maybe if they're 3.2 to 3.5, I'll just recheck them in about 3 to 6 months to see where the trend is going, but I'm really not sending out the big panels like I am for the dogs in that respect. And also just like the handling of medications is very similar. You do want to tell your clients to be careful when they are handling the medications, especially the transdermal methimazole, because it is absorbed through the skin. And if they're rubbing it on the inside of the ear with their bare thumb and then not washing their hand or not using the glove, theoretically, they could lower their own thyroid hormone. So things to pass on.
Yeah, that's a good point. And one thing just to add into that, because the slam dunk, the T4 of 7 is a slam dunk. But we see a lot that are in that 3 to 4. Most labs, their normal range is going to go up to 4 or even more. But look at the patient. If they're acting like they're hyperthyroid, I'll start thinking about treating them at 3 or at least getting them back in a lot quicker. And this is a good place where it's really, really valuable to have that 10-year-old geriatric blood screen that we can look back on. Mm-hmm. And so for those new grads that, even though it's not hyperthyroid, maybe it will be, and I'm going to be here and I'm going to be this family's veterinarian in 4 years. So I'm going to want to look back at a level when everything was perfectly fine and normal. And so if it was 1.2 and they've lost, you know, a pound or so, and now it's 3.2, that gives us more evidence to say something has changed and let's go from there. The other thing, just touch on, because I know we don't have much time, but there is feline TSH assays now. You can do them in your clinic. It's a good tool to have in those borderline ones, because as opposed to using the canine TSH to try to help us compartmentalize hyperthyroid cats, this one, the numbers are just more, you can separate them out and you can tell your patients one from the other a lot better. So look into that.
No, that's a really cool one. And I don't know if we have that one in my clinic yet. So I feel like I'm going to be asking about maybe adding that in. Granted, I guess that question that comes down to, are you running most of those labs in-house? Are you sending them out? Because I probably would just end up calling the lab like IDEXX and adding on a TSH or something.
They don't have, there's no reference labs that have feline TSH. Oh, okay. You have to buy the machine and get it in your clinic. And I mean, you just use serum, but they do want it in a little bit different tube, but you can use those tubes to send out all your lab work too. So as far as sending out all the other stuff, nowadays we can get it back so quickly, at least in a metro area, that, and I think my staff would rather just stick it in an envelope and have me look at it in the morning than do all the lab work if we're swamped. And usually none of them are that critical that I want to know. If it's thyroid, that's not the thing. If I'm worried about other things, that will make my decision if I want the blood work back in an hour or two instead of the next morning.
Like, is this a well patient or is this a really sick patient kind of decision? So, correct. And again, that's something that you have to think of as a new grad is deciding, okay, what is the time that it's going to take to get this lab work back? And can that patient wait through the long weekend or through the night even to get answers? So things that you kind of have to start thinking about when you are making these long-term mm-hmm. plans and communicating that to the client about the expectations of when they're going to hear back from you. But hopefully you've laid the groundwork that when you pick up that phone and you say, hey, Mr. Smith, I got Fluffy's lab work back. And yep, it does look like we have hyperthyroidism. They've already heard it once. You can talk about it then. And then you can always send follow-up emails with information so that they have further reading to kind of get them going. Because it's a lot of information to take in at once. So don't feel like you have to cover all the groundwork in that phone call. That would be the last thing I add, really.
Yeah. And I think I'll add one more last thing. I know we're running out of time. But in that, as a new grad, in that decision to do lab work out of the house or in the house, I think more of that is actually going to come down to your timing and ability, like you just referenced, to get back to that client. You want to be in contact with this client. Maybe you do want it to come back in a day and you're not going to be there. And some of their associate can cover it, or you're not going to be in for the next 3 or 4 days and you have to wait to get back to them on that. And so I think that would be, if I'm going to be in the next day, I'll just do it and I'll get back to him tomorrow. If it's like, I'm not going to be in for a couple of days, I really want to know this. So at the end of the day, I can contact this owner and just sort of put a bow on that whole case, wrap it up, and either give them reassurance, this isn't an issue, or hey, next week when I'm back in again, I'm going to give you some resources on how we're going to control this problem because now we have a problem. So it comes down to that communication.
Yep. All these teeny tiny decisions that you never really knew you're going to have to make, but they play into how you're going to take care of these patients and these clients. But hopefully this episode helped you guys out for when you see the first of many, and I really mean many, hyperthyroid feline patients in your careers. But Dr. Marshall, thank you so much for coming along and sharing your wealth of information and wisdom. But stay tuned to next week, guys, because we will be having many, many, many more clinical cases like this for you guys to learn from. All right. Until next time, guys. See ya.
So that's it for another show. Thank you so much to Dr. Mariah and her guests for today's tips. And if you're interested in learning more about what we do to support early stage vets in their careers, then check out my book, So Your Vet Now What?, or non-clinical skills training class of the same name. Until next time, take care.